Welcome to CI, Confronting the Issues, bringing a progressive faith perspective to the issues of today.
Company in the Lower Polk neighborhood of San Francisco. And welcome to this edition of CI, Confronting Issues, where we try to bring a progressive faith perspective to the issues of today. And today's program is going to be just a little bit different than what we've done in the past few weeks. The past few programs have, my guests have been clergy, and we've been talking about living our faith in our communities, in our respective communities, and how we do that successfully. Well, today we're going to kind of reverse the lens. We're going to look at it from the other side of the coin today. And I was sort of forced into this by sickness on the part of some guests and holiday and family emergencies on some of my scheduled guests. So with me today is Chris Shulman from the San Francisco Office of Economic and Workforce Development, which their staff works with neighborhoods in the city to develop businesses, help businesses succeed, and help neighborhoods thrive or develop to thrive. And so Chris has been an integral part of the Lower Polk neighbors here for some time, not only as a resident, but in his duties at for the city of San Francisco. And so what we're going to talk about today is the community's response, how communities and community activists view having a faith community, a faith congregation within their boundaries, and how they work together. At Lower Polk Neighbors here in the Lower Polk neighborhood of San Francisco, it's a rapidly changing neighborhood. It has changed a lot in the last few years. It's experienced some blight. Some business fleeing, what a lot of districts and urban areas face periodically as the economic cycle goes on. And so it's beginning an upturn now. And the particular area we're in has really become kind of an entertainment district, a lot of restaurants, bars, clubs, theaters, and things. And so that's really a change over 15, 20 years ago when it was a different kind of a neighborhood. It was also for a period during the 70s and 80s a predominantly gay neighborhood where a lot of cruising and hustling went on. And now in the nightlife, you see primarily young straight couples coming in. So it's really changed. And some people call that gentrification. Some people call it economic progress. In either case, regardless of your view, my congregation at my church, First Congregational Church of San Francisco, just built a new church building here. We located here to become a neighborhood church. And we host the Lower Polk Neighbor Association monthly meetings. I was just elected chair of the association. So we have a strong tie to the community. But I know often there's concerns about how religion and communities interact, and it comes sometimes from bad experiences on school boards and planning zones, and that oftentimes congregations are viewed as they oppose things, like a bar coming in or a certain club or a certain business, and they oppose it. And that's really something we really haven't entered into as a congregation yet, except maybe about parking meters. But we can talk a little bit about that. But I would like to let Chris talk a brief moment about his job, what his duties really are, his work with the community. Then we'll start kind of getting into our experience here in Lower Polk, and also invite any of the listeners out there to call in. The phone numbers are listed on the website that you're listening through. If you're in San Francisco, 415-287-0074. If you're calling on the toll-free number, it's 888-228-4494. Or you can call 530-776-5154 to call in. So, you know, if you have any views or ideas, please feel free. The phone lines are open. Please feel free to call in and contribute your ideas or or questions. And Chris, would you take a minute and tell us a little bit about your duties and responsibilities for the city?
Well, thank you for inviting me to be on the show, Risha. I've had the pleasure of listening to almost all of your shows, and it's nice to be on the sitting down at the table instead of adjacent to it. As Risha mentioned, I work for the Office of Economic and Workforce Development for the City of San Francisco, and more specifically, I work for the program that works with small businesses and neighborhood-based, the Neighborhood Marketplace Initiative. So at any given time when you're sitting in the room at City Hall that I sit in, you'll have people working with biotech, people working on the stadium rebuilds, Transbay projects. But the folks that I work with, we work with the small businesses in the neighborhoods. And kind of the premise behind our program is that, you know, you have to build a strong commercial corridor to really have a strong neighborhood. And there's a real connection. San Francisco, for folks who are listening, you know, beyond our little 7x7 square miles, a lot of people call it kind of the biggest small city, biggest small town, because our neighborhoods are very distinct, but they're also very small. Maybe unlike some cities where they have boroughs or parishes, we have just small neighborhoods that really just kind of anywhere from 3 or 4 blocks to maybe a dozen or two dozen blocks. So we take a real strong look at those. We work with the residents and businesses, and particularly what I do is work with kind of a couple angles I take. One is business attraction. Nobody likes vacant storefronts. It doesn't serve anybody well. So we look to fill in the gap. Maybe they need a local grocer, produce shop, butcher shop. Sometimes they need restaurants or bars. What I also do is look at business retention. A lot of businesses, especially these days, are struggling. They're kind of at the margins, and so I'll help connect them with programs. Sometimes it may be stimulus. Other times it's just how to market. But then we also look at how to connect residents and businesses together. But then also increasingly you start looking at what Risha alluded to was a faith-based connection. And that's where we're more and more looking at ways to partner with the faith-based community, churches, synagogues, mosques. And one of the reasons I got to know Risha is because of the new congregation. Well, they've been here for several years, but now the new church is up, and they've really just stepped up to be an important part of our neighborhood, and I got to know Risha through that, and it's been a very exciting last year or two.
Well, thank you, Chris. Well, I know it's been a challenging year, and I'm sure I have a challenging year coming up working with the association, as like any neighborhood in any city in America right now, or any city in the world, really. We face a number of challenges, some of them unique, some of them probably common to many areas around the country. But right now, how would you say, early on, some of the reaction to us building our new church building was, not the most positive. We had elements on both sides, people opposed, people supporting, but we had some pretty vocal opposition initially. The building that we bought, the property we bought, we tore down a, not historic in an official sense, but kind of a historic business, actually one of the first gay bars in the city, and a little sandwich place that was next to it. They had stopped operating, so, you know, we didn't kick them out or anything when we bought the property, but there was a lot of upset that we were gentrifying the neighborhood and we were siding with businesses, and some people were upset. But could I get some of your take, as you were around being part of that, on the neighborhood's reaction to having not a new congregation, but a new building, a new structure rising within their neighborhood?
Well, the first thing for folks to understand is that in San Francisco, we have rent control. And every building, pretty much, that has residents in it, for the most part, is going to stay the way it is. It's not going to change. So then you have one of the byproducts of that is that dedicated commercial buildings, commercial-only type buildings, Their days are numbered. I mean, they're going to become mixed use. They're going to have commercial ground floor retail or other uses, and then they're going to be, or they're going to be built for institutional use. So what you, at the core, you had a plot or a pair of plots that were for sale and were purchased and were developed. You know, it could have easily become a mixed-use condo project with 30 or 40 condo units. It's just kind of a fact of the matter. But you have passions in San Francisco, and you had passions from the...
Okay, we are back on the air. I'm sorry, we had a little technical glitch. My crew, Don and Seth, are outstanding in paradise, and they, whatever the glitch was, they have it solved for right now. So we're sorry, so I'm going to ask Chris to kind of rehash part of what he said about the passions of people in San Francisco and the reaction, some of the reaction that was kind of against us building the new church building.
Thanks, Risha, and I apologize if I repeat anything. Basically, what it comes down to is San Francisco, the most vocal prevail a lot of times. And in this case, there was a lot of vocal people, a lot of passions. And I think it was directed less at the church for religious reasons or otherwise, and just more towards the redevelopment of a kind of a high-profile corner. And it was during a time unrelated to the church, was during a time where neighborhoods were going through transition. A lot of the gay bars, or, you know, to an extent, depending on who you talk to, the hustler bars, were kind of transitioning out by their own regards. You had a lot of transition in the 90s with the LGBT population moving towards Castro, you know, they had grown up and started becoming more a part of society as a, you know, as a whole, and no longer really had as much of a need to have these self-identified bars on Polk Street. And so I think the church kind of got wrapped up and kind of got a bum rap in a lot of regards. But as I'm sure we'll get to, there's kind of been a, now the church is actually filling a role for a lot of people who need to have a church that accepts everyone. And I think we'll get to that a little bit later.
Yeah, I think, thank you, Chris. And again, I apologize for the technical glitch. These things happen. They tell us technology makes our life easier. Sometimes I just don't believe it. The church, or my congregation in this case, is now at a point where our new building is finished. Now we're settling in. So now we're trying to figure out as a people, how do we serve this neighborhood? Part of that effort is obviously becoming the host or providing space for the monthly meetings of the neighborhood association, being involved in it. Actually, I guess I can blame my pastor for dragging me to the first Lower Polk Association meetings, and that got me involved in the association that I now am an officer in. So I guess I can blame him for that, and partially blame the new president of the Board of Supervisors in San Francisco, who used to be the chair of this organization, who also kept pestering me about becoming part of it. So there's, I guess if they don't like me, there's plenty of blame to go around. But, you know, one of the issues for us as a congregation, the people, is, you know, how can we effectively really serve a neighborhood when we share many of the social values that even our protesters and detractors share, that perhaps they didn't understand that we share those same values. You know, there was a lot of issues about communication and stuff then, as there are in many disputes. Sometimes it's just simply, you know, a misunderstanding between people. But we have values of wanting to take care of the poor and marginalized, and that's part of our not only tradition as a congregation and our tradition as a denomination with the United Church of Christ, but just as people of faith and just as people of conscience, that, you know, we have that. And so
how do you view, as a part of city government, a resident of the neighborhood, how do you view a role in a general sense, maybe applying beyond San Francisco, or possibly applying beyond San Francisco, for a faith community becoming part of a neighborhood or a community viewing kind of the idea of a neighborhood as being similar to a small town?
Well, I think churches or other congregations they're absolutely integral to a neighborhood. And to some extent, they can help define neighborhoods. I look at some of the community building things that have been done just in the last year or two at your congregation. There's been neighborhood pizza events, book sales. You hosted neighborhood emergency response training for over 60 neighbors. And even just simple things as running into Pastor Wilfred at the coffee shop. Really does kind of really the congregation has weaved itself into part of the neighborhood fabric. When I grew up in San Jose in the Barrios neighborhood, we had St. Victor's Catholic Church, and the church had athletic fields, basketball courts, and whereas the school districts would lock everything off on the weekends, us neighborhood kids would be able to go play at those fields. It really was kind of a central point. We met there. The old church I went to, we had pancake breakfasts that were hosted there with the Boy Scouts. There was neighborhood fairs. When we had the yearly fair, it was a fundraiser for the church, but it was really just a way for everyone to go have fun. It was our carnival. And I think that churches are just absolutely essential to be part of the community. And if there's not a faith-based community, neighborhoods are void. There's absolutely a missing component of what makes a strong neighborhood.
Well, I think, too, that to kind of remind our listeners that when we're talking neighborhood or when we say faith community here or congregation, even though in my specific case we may be talking about my church, First Congregational Church, because that's where I serve, that's where I attend worship and things, but I'm not confining it to that. It could be a mosque, it could be a synagogue, it could be any kind of gathering, a spiritual type gathering. So I'm not trying to limit this to just a Christian or traditional Christian perspective. So please understand that as I use the terms congregation or refer to my church, that I'm really trying to find things in general that regardless of your faith tradition and your spiritual tradition that you can take with you and could be true for your group as well and something you might possibly entertain in your community or to help you if you're facing similar questions or issues within your physical geographic community where you're located. And part of, I think, the questions for us at First Congregational, and I think in many churches as they grow, and again, could be a synagogue or a mosque, is that as we develop or as we've been in existence over the years, we may be physically located in one place. But because of economic development and all the other ebbs and flows of people and economics that happen in communities around the country, our actual congregation members may move. They may not live in that same geographic area. They may live in another neighborhood in the city. They may live in the suburbs. They may, you know, they may not live and work within the confines of the neighborhood or geographic area where the church is located. And so being able to weave yourself into that community does become a challenge there as they're beginning to attract people from within the neighborhood as opposed to their existing members who may, you know, live on the outer stretches of town or here. A lot of our members live in the Sunset or towards the Castro, which is not the closest neighborhood to us for those of you who don't know San Francisco and don't want to bore you with a geography lesson of San Francisco, come visit us and to see it for yourself and visit our beautiful city. But I think it is one of the challenges, and so getting the kind of suggestions and perspectives from someone who deals with communities, I believe, is important. And, you know, how do you feel about us as members of a community, faith community, as a minister, a person seeking ministerial standing, also to now I'm assuming a leadership position in a community association? Some people, you know, might view that, you know, a little askance. I don't think any of the members at Lower Polk Neighbors had a particular problem with it. They did elect me. So,
well, you know, one of the great things about San Francisco is you really do, you some of the walls are broke or crumbled, and you really do look at people for what they can bring, what they bring to the table, what they can, you know, you look past certain stereotypes that could be there. You know, I grew up in a very progressive family. My brother's gay. My friends, I say my adopted parents, with my best friend, are just a lesbian couple who just, I'm closer to them than my own family. And so for me, it's hard for me maybe to kind of to put myself in some of the positions some other people have, where they are more stereotypical, or where they just don't accept different cultures, religions, genders, etc. So it's hard for me to look at it. But what I do see, I grew up in the Catholic Church, had a number of issues with the religion, with some of the teachings, with some of the attitudes, with just, it was tough. And when as we started to have evolving standpoints, we're no longer aligned with the Catholic Church. And I have, there's some pastors at my old church who I just hold with the utmost regard. Actually, as individuals, I hold all of them with the highest regard. Now I come to San Francisco, and it's also some other things like Metropolitan Community Church and some other groups, where I really feel welcome at the churches, whether I'm attending a service or if I'm just there at a community event, because what you find is you get what you want or what you need or what you seek. And there's some people who just need maybe somebody to listen. If you're approached by a night minister, which you, I'm sure, hope many of you listened to 2 weeks ago, they're open to provide you with what you need. And it could be some spiritual guidance, it could be religious guidance, it could be a combination of the both, or it could just be letting you know that you can get together with some people on a Sunday. And I think that's what really separates some of the institutions, and that's kind of a general thing here. You know, and just because some of the followers at your church come from the Sunset, that's because people in San Francisco are drawn to the institutions or fellowships that they feel most comfortable with.
Well, I think we're coming up to a break time here. It's almost 20 after. And so as we get ready, we will see you back here in 4 minutes.
Welcome to the Church of Total Acceptance. If you're a divorced single parent, press 1 now. Goodbye. Welcome to the Church of Total. If you're gay or lesbian, press 2 now. Goodbye. Welcome to, if you're overweight, have a mullet, or anything polyester, press 3 now. Goodbye.
God doesn't filter people out, neither do we. The United Church of Christ. No matter who you are or where you are on life's journey, you're welcome here. The United Church of Christ, where God is still speaking.
If you have a bumper sticker on your car, question authority, or otherwise think for yourself, please hang up now and have a nice day.
The United Church of Christ. To find the congregation that's right for you, go to ucc.org. The superfood for you and your family. Hemp has nutritional values that far exceed any known plant. Hemp, used for food, clothing, and shelter since time began. Hemp, this God-given food source is controlled by your government, making it not legal to grow for American people and farmers, but legal to import. Our founding fathers grew hemp because they knew of the benefits it offered. The protein powder, seeds, and oil are available through hempusa.org. Recommended daily intake of this food source will allow the body to heal itself from many ailments. Loaded with potassium, magnesium, calcium, essential fatty acids, amino acids, and nutrients not available in other plants. Hemp can be stored with a long shelf life as a life-sustaining food source for you and your family. Could this be the government's best-kept secret? Call today at 908-691-2608 and see what the powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Learn. Help. Shop at hempusa.org. We do not charge for shipping. That's 908-691-2608 or go to hempusa.org today.
Hi, I'm Jackie Zeman, and you may know me as Bobby Spencer from General Hospital, and you're listening to BBSRadio.com.
And we're back live from the Leland Tea Company in the Lower Polk neighborhood of San Francisco with this edition of CI, Confronting the Issues. And with me today has been Chris Schulman, from the Office of Economic and Workforce Development for the City and County of San Francisco. We are a combined city and county here, and an unusual thing in the United States. And we've been discussing, kind of looking at the role of faith communities in neighborhoods and the civic life of an area from the neighborhood perspective a little bit. We've had faith leaders on and clergy on talking about living our faith, so I thought it might be a good idea today to look at it from the other side of the coin and let neighborhood and civic leaders kind of share with us, as listeners, their viewpoints of that so we can get a better idea as people of faith how we can deal in our own respective communities, wherever they may be. And again, a lot of our comments, we talk a lot about specific things in San Francisco, not to exclude any other community, but that's our experience, and that's where we're at. And one of the other unique things about many of us here in San Francisco is we are typically from somewhere else. We came here from somewhere, and often we came here to escape from somewhere. I call us kind of social refugees. Many of us, especially those of us from the LGBT community, as lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people, oftentimes our families didn't appreciate or want us around. Our communities could not deal with us, and primarily our churches could not deal with us. So we have a very high percentage of people in San Francisco who have, to some degree, been abused and excluded and harangued by churches, typically more of the mainline conservative churches. And so when we talk about disaffected people here, a lot of it refers to LGBT people. That doesn't mean the same principle couldn't apply to any other group that is considered the other, whether they be immigrants, whether they be from a different ethnic group, racially or LGBT, or perhaps even another faith tradition, like a lot of communities are struggling with the incorporation of Islamic places of worship in their communities now, because that brings a new dynamic, a new family, a new business dynamic, a new social standard for what is acceptable and not, and many of these people don't understand a more populist or egalitarian culture like the United States. And so, or they're reluctant to deal with civic authorities. They have a natural distrust because of their homeland. You know, you don't deal well with officials, or officials may be corrupt. And so they have a custom of bypassing officials, to put it politely. And so that carries over here. So it poses a challenge sometimes, I think, to civic leaders, to our civil leaders, in trying to be sensitive to that, yet still enforce the community standards, be they zoning or conditional use standards on business permits, or many of the, as business people would argue here in San Francisco, the hoops that businesses have to go through, which I can understand why many of them are reluctant to do business in the city, because it is complicated if you don't know. But that's why we have people like Chris and Chris's counterparts in other neighborhoods in the city, and expediters and people whose job is to help you navigate this odd plethora of commissions and bureaus and permits and things that you have to have here to do business in the city. I think it's worth doing, but obviously I'm prejudiced. I live here in the city. But it is a fact of life here. And I think even in our neighborhood, we're facing that challenge. And we're facing the challenge of certain elements moving into the neighborhood in the sense of perhaps violent or criminal elements. And how do we approach that? And as people of faith, how do we respond to that to let our views be known, but not be perceived as a war on fun, or, you know, we just don't want fun stuff to happen, or, you know, we're just these fuddy-duddies who just don't want anything fun to happen, and or we're all white and up and middle class, and we don't want the other to come in. We have ours, so, you know, heck with everybody else. We don't want that to happen either. So it's a difficult mix sometimes to walk. And so, Chris, could I get some of your thoughts as a city official, a city employee that has to deal not only with us as a faith community, but, you know, new communities coming in, you know, be they a mosque, be they any kind of group coming into a neighborhood that bring in kind of different traditions and that natural distrust of authority?
Well, I think what's important is for everybody to respect everyone's positions and views. I think, you know, I'm working a lot with Islamic communities. We do have those issues where there's a restaurant or bar that's adjacent to a mosque. I mean, we don't have, you know, any space available. I mean, and it's tough sometimes. And I think when it really comes down to it, the real only way to deal with it is to work closely, to get to know everyone, not to take sides. You know, if somebody, you know, it could be the same thing between two businesses, but it's to really get to know the needs and concerns, you know, and I deal with it every day. And it's sometimes it's a restaurant versus a bar. It could be a church versus a restaurant. And I say versus just in terms of different viewpoints. Of course, there's not that much of a brawl going on. But I think what it really comes down to is we look at, you know, in our neighborhood, a lot of times it's different social economic factions. A lot of the folks serving, for instance, the homeless community, feel very strongly that we should not invest in anything, even the streets, and repairs until everyone is housed. And it's tough. But what it really comes down to is, and I was talking with a member of the faith community maybe 6 months ago, is that regardless of your socioeconomic position, you know, people want to be in safe, clean, and a welcoming neighborhood. And we can do different things. And I think when you really look at the different desires of a religious institution, be it a mosque, church, synagogue, they want a place where they feel welcome, safe, to practice their religion. And then the businesses next to them want a safe, welcoming place to do business. And I think in terms of red tape, everybody has it here. I think it's worse than anywhere else. Some cities, you have maybe an alderman, or you have a certain decisions are made a little more single-handed, whereas here you have about 14 different steps to go through departments, and you can appeals and everything. It'll take you years to build the church. So I think you need to treat everyone with respect is the key. And when you really look at a lot of religion and a lot of the basis of religions, respect and love is there. It's a foundation. And it's nice to be able to fall back on that sometimes.
It certainly, I believe, became a factor here when almost a little over a year ago, we began a project here. A young man got a grant and came up to do an oral history project about the, particularly the LGBT high point or time frame of dominating this neighborhood, and that still had a strong memory among many people in San Francisco, still carries, you know, a great deal, in some cases sentiment, some cases not so much sentiment, depends on who you talk to and what side of the coin they were on at that period of time. But he did this oral history project where he collected a lot of information and he interviewed people about how the neighborhood had changed, what their life was like when they were here, particularly the 70s and 80s, 80s probably more than anything. And then he took part of that and made an installation of audio files of those interviews so you could kind of walk through a little forest of audio stations and hear these stories and see pictures. And then he did a listening party where people got to listen to these stories and some of his analysis as a historian, which is his training by vocation, and that he'd done some postgraduate work on. So he had that, but I think even better than that was in the process of this project, we had identified some groups who dealt with the homeless and marginalized that are very prominent, or were very prominent in our neighborhood. Also understand that we are adjacent to one of the poorer neighborhoods called the Tenderloin. We're right next door to it. So we get spillover. You know, you can't, poverty and things don't know real distinct boundary lines. They don't stop because the street runs across or something. So we get a lot of the similar type problems or related issues. And so we had service providers who dealt with the homeless, who felt that, as Chris pointed out, planting trees, stuff just wasn't really improving the neighborhood. It was really a difference in how you define improvement. Some defined it as, until we improve the socioeconomic status of these marginalized people, it's not improved. Some look at what you could call cosmetic improvements, the trees, the lights, and, you know, clean and safe and welcoming look or image as improvement. And so part of this history project was a series of conversations where we actually met together as a small group, kind of intimate group, and the idea to air it. It was a safe place where we could air our opinions, could air our feelings, and, you know, things could come out. And it was, for some people initially, in the first months of it, or first weeks, was bumpy and not always the most comfortable because ideas were challenged. Perceptions were challenged. Preconceived notions were challenged. On both sides, on all sides, actually. There was more than two sides here. It was more like an octagon, or polygon. And after a few weeks past that, you know, a real connection dynamic began to take place between the groups. For now, at least, we may not see eye to eye on every specific issue where we match, you know, line per line our ideas, but there's not this sense of one being an enemy, you know, the us and them, the good guys, bad guys kind of thing, and a really a sense, much more of a sense, of cooperation and synergy between the groups, of kind of realizing, hey, we're after the same thing here. You know, we're kind of, we approach it differently, and if you think that planting trees is a way to go, we'll help you plant trees. But understand that, you know, we want, you know, bathrooms for homeless people or whatever the issue might be. And those talks were, those community conversations, I think, were so instrumental in calming down a lot of that animosity between the different socioeconomic groups, different factions within the neighborhood. I was a party to some of those sessions, both representing the neighborhood association and just to do it on my own. And also, since one of the leaders of the of that ministry was a clergy person that I knew, we're also an associate and a colleague. So there was a lot of different connections there. But I think it's a great model. If we look, if you're looking at different things, wherever you're at, wherever your community is geographically located, communication is a good thing if it's real and honest. And so if you can set up that and figure out a plan to do that, I would say that that is so critical to helping you, you know, achieve some kind of synergy or positive outcome in it. And you were involved in many of those programs, some that I wasn't involved in, especially the listening parties and things. Could you give us some impression about that?
Well, I appreciate bringing that up because there's a lot of things that I did for us as a neighborhood and me as myself. I took a little bit of a leap of faith on that whole project and had to kind of drag some people along at the onset. You know, thanks to folks like Risha who really did have an open mind and really did want to try something a little different, where we, instead of choosing an issue and then meeting over it, we decided to meet, and then we started looking at the issues kind of one-on-one, and what we found was that a lot of it was a misunderstanding. A lot of it, there were some just opinions that didn't, that hadn't had an opportunity to explain, express. For instance, access to bathrooms. A lot of the homeless advocates felt that a lot of the a lot of businesses and restaurants were just shutting out homeless folks or folks who may have appeared such from using these bathrooms because they were down on luck, because they were homeless. What we found out was that there was a lot of vandalism involved, a lot of things being flushed down the toilets that caused thousands of dollars of plumbing issues. And one of the things that came out of that is we need to really look as a community how we can maybe identify a location and a means to open a bathroom for all folks to use. Now is not the best time. Economics are tough, but I really think that's something that's going to come out of it.
I think that, you know, that was certainly one issue, and there were a whole lot of them as we continued these. Unfortunately, the clock has caught up with us again. We're at that second break period, and so we will see you all in 4 minutes.
Talk and Love, Talk and Love, BBS Radio, Talk and Love, BBS.
Hey everybody, this is Dean Mrs. Reich. I am the star of science fiction show Lex the Dark Zone. Well, I hope you're listening to Dr. Fred Bell's show on bbsradio.com. well, if you want to do Dr. Brad Bell's Health Science and Energy.
Health Science and.
Well, what was it?
Health Science and.
Health Science.
Just say you're listening to Dr. Bell's Health Science and.
And Energy.
Health Science and.
Energy Show?
That yeah. works. In fact, I can
edit. Health, Energy, and Science Show.
Health Science and.
We just call it the Dr. Bell Show.
Okay, well, that's what I did.
Same thing, only a little shorter. Yeah, same thing. Health Science and.
Please join us every Saturday morning for Temple of Health Radio Show, brought to you by Plastikos and Millennium Healthcare. Our holistic medical practices in Atlanta are committed to community education. Our shows bring you national authors on topics of health alternatives, new scientific breakthroughs, and spiritual medicine.
Hi, Peggy Lee Quayler here. Thanks for listening to Songs from My Stories Untold album. Copies of the album are available from cdbaby.com/CD/Peggy Lee with an A. And thanks for listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com, the number one internet radio network on the planet.
This is the town center. It's just like hell. I got big issues and stories to tell. What language are you speaking? Where are you from? I'm from the train station, I'm lost in translation. I'm not attention seeking, that's my bloody job. Man, I got big issues, yes, I've got a lot. You can find me in the town center. This place is just like hell. I got big issues, stories to tell. You can find me in the town center. If you have the guts, you can find me in the town center.
Well, hello, everybody. This is Sal Bellois. You're listening to BBS Radio, Los Angeles, California. You can hear my tunes right here, so listen up.
Leland Tea Company in beautiful San Francisco, and with this edition, the first December program of CI, Confronting the Issues. With me is Chris Schulman from the City of San Francisco's Office of Economic and Workforce Development, and I finally have that drilled into my head because his office used to be part of the mayor's office, but it's been changed. So I don't have to refer to him as one of Gavin's boys.
Thank you.
So we're coming up, and as we come up to the closing few minutes of the program here, and we think of our closing thoughts, it's really a lot of how can we, as people of faith, how can we interact with our respective communities, wherever we're at, become part of that, and to attract people to our particular faith, not repel people, but really become a resource to our community. And for us, I know here we live in earthquake country. And earlier Chris mentioned NERC, Neighborhood Emergency Response Team training. And this is where we train citizens to be able to provide a very basic level of a survival rescue, first aid, search and rescue, very, very minimal and very basic, to their community in a time of disaster. And it's a free training sponsored by the fire department. I helped, when I was a federal employee, I helped create the program over 11 years ago. Somewhere around 11 to 12,000 San Franciscans have been trained in this over those years. But the idea is that most rescues, say, after an earthquake, are performed by friends and neighbors. 85% of the rescues and saves are done by friends and neighbors. In the emergency management business, we call those emergent volunteers. That sounds disgusting, doesn't it? But we also found that without training, a number of these emergent volunteers became casualties. So the idea of developing training like NERT came up, and it's a great, you know, talk about a bang for the buck. It's one of the best bangs for the buck there is. And in most communities, it might be called community emergency response training because FEMA took the program over from California to make it a national one right after the Loma Prieta earthquake in 1989. So we sponsored the training. We also, because our building is new and the most seismically safe building in the immediate area, we are looking at becoming the equipment cache and a rallying point where these NERT teams can assemble, get their directions from the fire department, and can move out and really begin to help their neighbors in the when the big one strikes, which is how we refer to it here in California country, the big one. That's what we're always talking about. But it could be, you know, it's different issues in different communities. Wherever you're located at, might be hurricanes in Florida, could be, whatever. But the idea is that we're becoming a community resource. And I think that's such a key to part of the process, not the only answer, but it's part of the process of integrating ourselves into the community. But as we come up to these closing minutes, I'd like Chris to give us his thoughts, closing thoughts, any ideas about this interaction of communities, faith communities within the geographic community or political community of a particular city or community.
I think my comments would be is that for folks who are not necessarily religious or have maybe they've had some negative experiences with religion, approaching a church, whether it's on an individual level or a neighborhood level, can be tough, you know. And I just want to encourage folks who are part of different congregations, whether it be a synagogue, a mosque, or a church, reach out to your community. You know, don't wait for them to reach out to you. And if you reach out to them, with a welcoming style or inviting, maybe hosting community events, host community functions, look to your Boy Scout troops, your Girl Scout troops, pancake breakfast, pizza, I think you will find that you're well received, and that you'll be part of a community, a strong part of community. You'll make your congregation stronger, and you'll also make your community stronger.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. We're coming up to the closing point of the program now, and I have a lot of people to thank, including you, Chris, for taking your time out of your schedule and being part of our show today. And my engineering crew in Paradise, Don and Seth, and, of course, the Leland Tea Company for taking such good care of us here and not only giving us delicious tea but wonderful goodies to munch on, the best Madeleines around. I can't eat another Madeleine.
Agreed.
And sandwiches and baked goods of all sorts. And I just ask you to be with us for our next program in 2 weeks. And I'll be picking up the threads from some earlier programs, the Veterans Day program and some of the others, things that just can't be covered in 55 minutes. We'll pick up some threads and bring up some other guests. And so we are out of time, and the clock has caught up with us. So we are getting set to off the air.
You have been listening to CI, Confronting the Issues. For comments or questions on this or any CI program, contact us via the web at www.mycradio.com. I'm your host, Risha Ann Young. Join us for the next edition of CI right here on the BBS Radio Network, Channel 2.